Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, yes, yes. This is another episode of Wake Up African People, and this is the Truth Doctor. Today, we have Khadija Rafiq, and I'm going to read her bio. Khadija Rafiq has worked in the field of race relations for 2 decades, previously working for the UK Commission for Racial Equality, where she conducted formal investigations into institutional racism and advised members of the public on the legal merits of their racial discrimination claims. Today, she is a Black empowerment professional, the creator of its controversial and anti-discrimination training board game, the foundation CEO of the new website, blackmarket.global, a site created for Black people to buy and sell their micro job services online to brothers and sisters worldwide. And we are so happy to have her on our show tonight. She has written a book called Black is a Dirty Word. And if I mess that up, I hope she will correct me. Here she is, the wonderful, intelligent young lady, Khadija Rafiq. The mic is yours, my sister.
Thank you, Arthur. First of all, I'd like to thank you very much for inviting me on your show. It's so very exciting. And also for that wonderful introduction. Thank you very much indeed. I'm really happy to be here to give you and your listeners an insight into my book, Black, a Dirty Word. So I'll just go on just to give you an explanation about what the book is about. The book really focuses on the link between mental enslavement and economic disability of the Black race. It essentially how the white supremacist system binds Black people to a life of indignity, injustice, inequality, brutality, and dependence upon a global empire that actually keeps us oppressed and dysfunctional. And in that dysfunctional state, we lack power and wealth, thus leaving us mentally enslaved and economically disabled. The book also dissects the design of the systems that we live under to show how it divides us and makes us hate each other and ourselves, makes us consumers, not business owners, commodities for the prison system, and how it educates us and our children to believe that white is supreme. The book itself is not too long. There are just 7 chapters, and the chapters are designed to keep readers interested. And I'm told by people that have already read the book that once they start reading it, and I quote, they cannot put it down. So this isn't me saying it. This is my readers saying this. The book starts off, as I said, it has 7 chapters, but it starts off with a poem that I wrote to give the readers insight of how Black people are manipulated by the system to make us behave in a manner of self-destruction. And that poem is called Beware the Deadly Smiling Assassin. And if I may, I would like to just quickly read that poem out to you. It's very short. So
yes,
the poem goes, is it okay for me to read it?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Good. Okay. So here we go. The intro of the book, Beware the Deadly Smiling Assassin. He smiles as in one hand he gives you seeds of hope. He smiles in the other you get an ounce of dope. He smiles when he grants you race equality law. He smiles when his racism makes you stay poor. He smiles as he lets you integrate his schools. He smiles as education turns you his fool. He smiles as you spit your profanity rap. He smiles as young brothers kill each other, cap, cap. He smiles when you make a career out of crime. He smiles when his judges say, now do whole heap of time. He smiles as you form your Hood Street gang. He smiles as his police guns then bang, bang. The smiling assassin is a deadly machine, a force to be reckoned like a guillotine. Beware as he smiles, he wipes you out clean. Your black liberation becomes a pipe dream. So that is just an introduction just to whet the appetite of the reader. And you'll also find that Black, A Dirty Word is the only book that discusses the issues of systematic racism with solutions to those issues. There's actually a seven-step uplifting methodology within the book to beat the racist systems and become economically self-reliant. So after each chapter, there's a step. So there's seven steps in total. And I call those self-reliant action steps. That's what they're called. So really, that is just a summary of what the book is about. And I'm hoping that that summary will whet the appetite of your listeners to read the book for themselves and to, you know, help the black race unite and uplift us to become economically self-reliant. So that is really what the book is about, essentially.
And your base is in Britain, right? Let the people know.
I'm based in London, UK London. That's where I'm based.
Mm-hmm.
I'm based in London.
Now,
and the book essentially, it covers a lot of issues that are within London, but also in the US. People, black people within the US would be able to relate to the issues within the book because the issues are of black people globally, not just in London. But obviously I've spoken about some that are specific to London. So I've given, like, for example, statistics, prison statistics that are just for London. But obviously people worldwide in the US can relate to, you know, the prison systems and the types of issues that are discussed within the book.
Yes, and could you elaborate on the racial dynamics between black, white, and black and other immigrants inside England?
Yes. The total population of the UK is about, I think, maybe 65 million or plus. UK blacks make up about 3% of the population, and that was given with the 2011 government census, because they do the census every 10 years, and that was the last census. So we make up about 3% of the population. They tend to group black, Asian, all non-white together, what they called ethnic minorities. So the current population for ethnic minorities is 14% within the UK, and black people make up about 3% of that population.
But wasn't the black minorities the first to be introduced into Britain? Or was it the Indians?
No, it was black people. Through in the 1950s, obviously the UK government needed people to come over here and do jobs that really white people wouldn't do. So they were all the jobs like, you could say, the bus driver jobs, the cleaning jobs, and things like that. So they actually went over to the Caribbean countries, Jamaica, Barbados, all those types of countries, to get people to come over to the UK. And the people that came over were actually, a lot of them were just qualified people. Some were nurses, some were lawyers, some were doctors. They was coming over for jobs, but they were only given the lesser jobs to do. So the black people came over in about the 50s, and you could say maybe the late 60s, Asian people started coming over from, say, Pakistan and Bangladesh. They started coming over in the very late 60s, early 70s.
So what would you say that the economic disparity is between blacks and the immigrants on a scale of 1 to 10? Do black people own as many businesses in Britain as them or don't?
Black people are not doing very well economically. You find that the people that came later, which are the Asian people, are doing much better than black people. Black people tend to... We're actually consumers. We are not business owners. So we tend to spend outside of our community, whereas you find that Asian people particularly spend, and Jewish people as well, spend inside of their community. So the money goes out of our community. We spend it with other people, and other people use the black community as consumers and build up the wealth for their own community. At the moment, there's about, 16,000 black-owned businesses within, that's London, that's within London. So that isn't that many.
So
when you look
does
at the population.
Does your book speak on this disparity or does it not?
Yes, it does. It does. It speaks a lot on economics because the book is essentially about economics. It's not just about all of the nasty issues about the African Holocaust, but obviously those things come into play because they relate to mental enslavement. But it talks a lot about how we are economically disabled. We don't have money. We don't have power because we don't have money and we don't unite in business. Either we don't really own business. We're not really owners of businesses. We are consumers. So the book looks a lot about trying to turn the black community into business owners as opposed to being consumers for other people. I mean, if I take, for example, the black care industry, which is a perfect example of black people spending outside of their community, the black hair and skincare is massive money-making industry, and we are the main contributors to that, but we're not the financial benefactors. Yeah, the hair industry in the UK, just the black hair care, is worth about five and a half billion, can we say, and black women account for about 80% of the total hair product sales. But the vast majority of the people that are selling the products aren't black. So what we're doing is we're making other races rich through our own needs and through the things that really are products that are exclusive to us. We're allowing other races to sell them to us and get rich from us. So we are really, economically, we are poor.
So in your book, does it talk about how black people can break away from this consumer mentality and get into a business mentality so that this can be turned around?
Indeed, it does. And these are the seven steps that I was referring to initially, the seven self-reliant steps help black people to move forward out of the mental enslavement that they are in at the moment. So it does give solutions. It doesn't just talk about the issues. It gives solutions to the issues.
Yes, because it's a lot of books out about this, but nobody is not seeming to put down a remedy. And if your book has a valid remedy, I think that it should be bought by all who can afford. And I want to just say this, get your opinion on this. I've noticed that this model that the European has set up, first he took it into Africa in the island countries where he brought the immigrants over and seem to set them up in business why the blacks become consumers. It happened in South Africa. It happened in Jamaica. It happened in Barbados. I mean, most of these island countries, the blacks don't even control them, and they said that it's their country. Sister was telling me not long ago that the Chinese run and own all the businesses in Jamaica. And I know that you're Barbadian born. Is that same model being done in your country?
Not as much in as it is in Jamaica. I mean, you do have some Asians, but not so many, because what happened was before, Guyanese people were coming over to Barbados, and I'm talking about the Guyanese, the Indian Guyanese, were coming over to Barbados, and the Bajan government noticed that they were starting to buy up and, you know, take over in business, and they actually packed them back to Guyana. So they didn't. They didn't tolerate it. They saw that it was happening, and they stopped it. So there isn't that many. There may be some of them, but it isn't a real issue like it is in Jamaica. No.
And it's in South Africa. It happened. Blacks are starting to get some businesses, but not like it is in Ghana. It's the same thing. Nigeria. As people are complaining that the mom and pop African stores are shutting down because of cheaper Chinese fakes. And I'm to the point to where I think this is a process that's being set up because black people ourselves were groomed for jobs. From day one, they enslaved us for us to do jobs. And this mentality in America was being broken right after slavery. You know, the blacks wanted to be self-sufficient. You know, we had Booker T. Washington, we had Marcus Garvey, we had Henry McNeil Turner. We had a lot of great black people tried to warn us about this, but then we had the integrationist black people that wanted to just rub elbows with white people, and what has happened is we got completely sold out because it's a lot of businesses in black America, but they seem to fail. And when black people open up businesses in the neighborhoods, it seems that blacks don't want to go out of some type of deep down, ingrained crab in the bucket type mentality that they don't want to see another black person rise above the rest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And these are the issues that we need to address because we don't support ourselves, each other. We don't support each other in business because we have that, like you say, that crab in the bucket mentality. We're fighting against each other rather than uniting and building up business to work together. But that is the whole system, the whole white supremacist system that we are brainwashed under. But what we have to do is we have to start waking up and realizing that we are actually brainwashed. And we need to come out of this brainwashed mentality. If we do not, then we cannot actually move forward. We cannot build business. We cannot support each other because we're still being in that same frame of mind. We need to leave that frame of mind behind and realize that we're just being used as donkeys, as commodities, as consumers. And then only once we come out of that mentality, only then can we unite and build up the empire that we once had. That's what we need to be doing. And this is what my book addresses a lot about the mentality that we are currently in and how we can remove ourselves from that mentality. We have to start thinking as a unity rather than just as individuals because we think a lot as individuals. And what we do is we only care about our 9-to-5. That we're in the system and all we care about is, you know, our next thing and how we're going to pay our next bill or how we're going to buy our next pair of shoes. It's all about me, me, me. But we have to start thinking collectively. It's very, very important that we think collectively and we support each other as a race. We must. It's essential that we support each other as a race and in business. Yes. If we don't, we will fail and we will be annihilated. And that's what we have to realize because we are being annihilated. We are. And if we don't do something about it, you know, we will be no more. So we need to actually do something.
Well, doing something is not having to fight physically, as a lot of Negroes are scared of the physical battle. We have to be mental and physically creating our own economics within our communities and spend
exactly.
with each other. Marcus Garvey said it right, race first. And race first don't mean you got to hate white people, Asian people, or nothing. It's just to consider your race first above other races, just like all other races do before they go out to
exactly.
buy something. And I know that it's not black businesses, but we can create black business through consumership. If the consumers want their products from black people, black businesses will be coming next because that's how it all gets started. Stop going into the Chinese store for shrimp fried rice or shrimp fried cat or shrimp fried dog. You don't even know what the hell you're getting in there. Stop
exactly.
going to all places, the Arab shop. And these people hate your guts. They would never buy from you because they know that if they buy from you and exclusively buy from black people like we exclusively buy from everybody else, it would destroy their race's economic power that they have over you. They could come into your
exactly.
communities. If you're a penny short when you go in these stores, they run you out. I have many times had gone to the store to get a drink or something because it's maybe not a black store where I can get a drink at. And I see these poor black people saying, well, I'm 5 cents or a penny short. The Asians, shoo them away, get away. They like doing that. They like, and this black person could have been buying from them all week, all month, all year. And they won't even let them go for a penny, a nickel, or a quarter. We have a
yes.
caller on air, starting out with 314. And last number is 4600. Do you have anything to add to the show?
Well, I appreciate the lady writing the book because you need books like that, just like you need Amos Wilson's book, Blueprint for Black Power. But I'm going to say this. Asians are actually doing you a favor. You don't want those jobs anyway. And here's another point. Blacks will never be able in the United States to produce, whereas the prices and the costs would be more attractive than if you was to produce like every other ethnic group does. They produce in their own country where the labor is affordable, things are cheap, and they have trade advantages. Blacks
mm-hmm.
are not going to buy from a black store when it's not selling as cheap as it would from an Asian store. And like you
mm-hmm.
said, that Asians are not going to buy from you, guess what? They are not going to sell you at family prices like they sell to their cousins who is already in your community retailing you the stuff that you want blacks to come to your store. That's not going to work like that. You need to put the whole formula together. You got to manufacture and produce in an African country where the labor is cheap, affordable, and also where things are conducive for you to get ahead, like trade agreements and so forth. Another point, at this point in stage in the history of mankind, blacks in 2016 should eye the high technology, manufacturing, producing, those services, developments, rather than concentrating on competing with Asians and other poor folks who's in that realm of business that we call these little shops and stops and so forth. I'm sorry, you just can't do it like that. They control that.
Well,
and I'm
I agree with what you're saying, but black people have to start actually being able to support each other. That's where it's going to start. We have to stop purchasing from these people and start buying with our own people. That's where it has to start. And then once we start that and we can build up business, then we can start doing what you say to do. We can control the whole process. But before we do that, we actually have to start at the beginning, and that is supporting the small shop, the small black shop, not buying from the Asian shop, but buying from your own brother up the road, regardless of if his products are more expensive than the Asian one. It's the principle of what it is that should send you to the black shop, and that is the mentality that we have to try to change first.
All right,
before we
can stop you right there on that point. Let me stop you right there on that point. Then, if you want to do that, that requires indoctrination of a complete generation. How do you indoctrinate them? You indoctrinate them in a school that you control. You cannot indoctrinate that type of mindset in the public schools. And I don't know what it is in the UK, but you're not going to indoctrinate children like that in the American schools unless it's private schools. I indoctrinated my kids like that, but they never went to public schools.
We have to have our own schools. We have to try to build our own schools.
Let me cut
in on that. That requires money. Go ahead, sir.
Look, we have to indoctrinate them before they get into the schools and when they come back home every day. The children are with us more than they are in the school. So if they go to church, if they go to the mosque, or wherever they go, the parents need to be indoctrinating their kids 24/7 and stop waiting for these schools to train our children. This is the problem now. We've handed our children over with integration into the hands of our natural enemy.
But think about what you just said. Parents have to. Well, the parents wasn't taught that themselves. Wait a minute. The parents weren't taught that themselves, so you got to teach that in the children who would be future parents.
But some people are aware. So it starts with some people. Not every single one of us have the slave mentality. There are some of us that know what we ought to be doing. There are some people that can do it. So we can start doing it. There are in the UK, you have, let me use Islamic schools as an example. You have Islamic schools started up by people that come from mainly Pakistan and Bangladesh. They've created schools so that they can teach people about their kids about Islam. And when those kids go home, again, they're teaching those children about business. They're teaching them their children about the whole culture, the whole economics of their country and how to behave. So
and let's compare
it,
that.
It can be done. Sorry?
Let's compare that with what goes on in America.
Brother,
you got black Muslims here.
My brother.
Let me put
the host of the show. My dad took all of his children to work. My whole career was based on my dad's career. I used to lay ceramic tile, marble floors, hardwood floors. It was called interior decorating at that time. Since I've been alive, I know that I have trained over 500 men, especially right here in the city of Detroit where I'm at, also where it's men that see me on the streets that stop their cars. My teacher, he taught me that's feeding their families and stuff. See, we can't look at all black people because the way we've been indoctrinated, but it's those out here like ourselves that know that should be out here 24/7 trying to capture the minds of any black person that will listen to us. This is why I have the radio show. This is why I have the Facebook thing. And this is why I go out into the streets and talk to my people. See, we can't become hopeless people, you know, talking that keep hope alive crap Jesse Jackson was doing.
Well, nobody's talking about being hopeless, sir. You know what Highway 75 run through Detroit there? You got a highway patrol office out there on 75. Across the street from there, you got an office building. I put that office building up back in the 1970s. My family was skyscraper builders. I own a company that put up buildings like 9/11 that came down. I hired over 500 black people as iron workers where they make, and if I'm working in New York, they work $96 an hour. So I can only tell you, from my success, what people who are not successful is doing wrong.
And that's what I'm trying to tell. I think I like what you said, Arthur. I think that we need to talk to people. People that are aware need to try to educate other people. And I think that my book is just my way of trying to reach as many people as I can to get the word out, to try to change people's minds about how we ought to be acting and uniting as a race. So I think it's a bit negative to say that, you know, we can't do this and we can't do that. I think we need to look at what we can do and do our piece, what we can do as individuals.
If we can come
message out there to the masses.
Look, if we can walk up out of slavery into what we were doing right after slavery and keep that same mindset, they still have black historical towns like Mound Bayoun and different places. So Soul City was later on. Different stuff that we can go back and visualize and see what our people were doing. But Booker T. Washington said it right. Black people are scared to go to the dirt where you start building civilization from the dirt up, because the stigma of slavery is kind of like scared them away from planting some growing stuff and all kinds of things that has to do with the dirt, because the dirt is the start of building any civilization, but we're not at that point. So we have to take the little bit we have, like the little businesses in our communities and everything, and try to turn this thing around. And my ideal is we need to start visiting some of these poorer countries like Haiti and all that, and set up factories in these countries where we can compete with the prices that's coming from Asia and all that. Like a lot of these other countries.
That's what I'm talking
about.
Even
these small, small stores that you see, that these the big stores that you see probably in the U.S. and also in the U.K., those stores, they didn't start big. They started very small. Even though, all right, they're not black stores, but they're white stores. But my point is that you start off small and you build. That's the point. Mm-hmm. We start off small and we build.
And you know what? Blacks have those towns. You got 13 of the about 50 black towns that blacks went out in the West, in Oklahoma, and formed. Tap City is still there in Oklahoma. It's all black. You got 13 more that's still all black. You got, like you mentioned, Soul City there in Warren County in North Carolina. You got Freedom Town in South Carolina. You got Brooklyn across the river from me in Illinois. Those look like this. You got the South.
You got Boley, Kansas, where the rodeo started
they need
at.
So they need to be replicated, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, no, what they need is that you need to have an infusion of people into these towns, because the towns already exist. They got infrastructure, they got water, sewer, electricity.
Yeah.
They exist there today.
Yeah. Mount Bayoun used to be the place where the civil rights workers used to go for refuge in the South, where the whites that never came into that town but one time looking for a black guy they claimed raped a white woman, and they ran him out then. And look what happened to Robert Williams. Robert Williams picked up the gun, and the whole civil rights movement went around where he was. It didn't even stop in this town, because he said that he's going to protect himself and his people. Go ahead, my brother.
In 1999, I visited Detroit. I videotaped Malcolm X Academy, Paul Robeson, Timbuktu, Inseroma. Those were excellent schools. The only thing they lacked was economic components to them. That has to be in your school, along with the indoctrination.
Let me say this, brother. I am so glad that you called in. I know who you are. I can't call your name. I always respect your opinion. And the sister... I've been running to her on my Facebook page, and she is phenomenal trying to do the work that she can. Now, all of us are trying to do what we can, and we have to be together on what we think. So your opinion means 100 to me, just like her opinion does, and I hope my opinion stands with you. And I'm so I hope you return, my brother. Would you say your name if you would
my
like?
My name is Pianchi, and I just want to say this. Blacks form these huge economic markets, especially in the South, in states where you make up no less than 30% of the population, in Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, and I believe South and North Carolina. Those are huge economic markets. But you cannot produce here and sell to those markets. You got to do like you mentioned earlier. We need to be over in West Africa, where things are shaped to our advantage and give you leverage over the Asians.
Yeah, exactly. And my sister, go ahead and give your website, contact, and how they can get your book. We shut off.
Yes, okay. So it's an e-book at the moment, because an e-book is more accessible for people. you can read it on your laptop and so on. So it's an ebook, and you have to go to my website, which is called itscontroversial.co.uk. So you just go to itscontroversial.co.uk, and you will see there you can just press a button that says read it, and then you can just pay. It's only £5.99, which is very cheap. That I'm not quite sure what that is in US dollars. Maybe about $8 or something.
Money is above us.
Yeah, so it's very cheap, and it's very easy to obtain. So you just go to, as I said, www.itscontroversial.co.uk, and you press the button once the site opens, and you can purchase my book for only £5.99 or $8 US. And I thank you very much in anticipation for buying my book.
Yes. And my brother Pianchi, would you like to state something or how people can contact you for information if you have anything, a business, anything?
Well, I'm on Facebook, and I spent too much time on there. I'm going to admit to you. But I'm Pianchi Bencoli, and that's where you can find me. And this Sunday, we have a lady here is putting on a lecture and information on to elementary school, high school students, college students, and young professionals, blacks, on how they can get involved in diplomacy, working for a U.S. U.S. embassies, where they can be working USAID around the world. Because when you begin to travel, you begin to see things. We also champion that trade unions, trade groups, that business sponsor to go into African countries, and that they have to have a certain minimal percentage of black salespersons or staff that accompany them. Because when people go to other places and they begin to look around, then they begin to gather ideas. And that's something that we don't have, these type of ideas.
You know what
can
I think,
sorry,
my brother?
Can I?
Go ahead, sister. I'll go after you.
No, I just got, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to add, because your guest, I didn't hear his name, I was just going to add that I could also be found on Facebook as well, because I think that's very important if people want to contact me. And obviously, you can contact me, Khadija Rafiq, if you wanted to, on Facebook as well. So I just wanted
yes.
to add that.
And you can also contact me on Facebook as Arthur Ralston. My Akbar Ralston page was taken down because I was putting so much stuff on there, and they started asking me my name and information and all that stuff, so I let that page go. I am right now on Arthur Ralston's page. That's my page. That's my name my parents gave me before I changed it when I was into Islam. And also, I questioned the brother. Well, he said, I think that we need a person just like Sufi Abdul Hamid. If anybody ever heard of him, he was from Chicago. He moved to New York, and he agitated the trade unions. He made sure that Jews didn't give a jobs in there to black people, that they could not even have business there. And they claim that Al Sharpton was the new Sufi Abdul Hamid, but he's nothing like him. Sufi Abdul Hamid had his own personal airplane. He was training brothers to go over to Ethiopia to fight the Ethiopian war against Italy back in the day. And if you don't know who Sufi Abdul Hamid is, because they wrote him. Let me finish. He was married to Madam Sinclair, the lady who started the nickel and dimes number game. That's up for what's the name? They said Casper, what's his name? Casper Weinstein. They said he might have started it. But look up Sufi Abdul Hamid. He's a brother that they wrote out of history, basically, or you don't know about him, and you will learn some stuff. Go ahead, my brother.
Yeah, you might be. You had another brother that his name was Julian. They called him the Black Eagle. He was a pilot, and he flew for Ethiopia in their war against Italy. He would have been the first person to fly across the Atlantic. He attempted to do it about 2-3 years before Lindbergh. I can't say Julian was his.
Julian Fauntleroy.
Okay.
Oh, you also had the Brown Condor, who fought for Ethiopia. He died fighting for Ethiopia. He taught Ethiopian and started their Air Force. He was over there many times. He was flying a medical thing. and him and Julian Flunteroy had a fist fight in Ethiopia because Julian Flunteroy crashed the Emperor Haile
Selassie. The only plane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Hey, Julian Flunteroy used to sell weapons. He would sell weapons to Finland and all them different countries. He's a weapon deals. We got some great black people that black people don't know about. You need to look up the Brown Condor, Herbert Julian Flunteroy.
That's it.
He used to jump out of the plane during the Garvey
parades.
And land down in the middle with a parachute, and he did that at Haile Selassie's coronation and landed right in front of Haile Selassie. Because we had
Hubert
powerful
Julian,
black
you're right.
loved each other.
You know, let me tell you something. And I'm going to tell the sister, too. Black people got everything they need to change their situation around. Whites will not teach your children to compete against theirs because blacks at one time in the history of the world did run the world. They controlled trade routes. They had powerful armies.
Oh, yeah.
And they were mass producers. You got everything. Mm-hmm. And I witnessed this. You got everything we need to change our situation around. It is going to happen.
Apart from the correct mentality.
Yes. It's going to happen because we're talking about it. I hear more people talking about it today. So it's getting to the point where it's going to tilt over. Africa, especially Nigeria, will be a world power one day, whether they want to or not. There's no stopping an idea whose time has come.
But let me say this, my brother. Don't you know that during World War II, Liberia had the second largest mercantile industry in the world? And President Tubman had built up Liberia. Go look back at Liberia when he was a president. They were building beautiful stuff over there. A lot of white people, but they destabilized it because after that, President Tolbert was part of the building up the OAU, the Organization for African American Unity, with Kwame Nkrumah and them. And the black American Liberians were pushing the issue that whites could not really be trusted across Africa, and they had to destroy that country, Liberia.
And I said Nigeria, not Liberia, but you're right about Liberia, too.
I know you said Nigeria, but I'm talking about Liberia. And the Firestone rubber plantation is where they launched most of the insurgencies onto the government, and they waited for a rice riot, little small riots with the rice, because the price of rice went up because they were not helping Liberia. The British was against them, the Germans was against them, America was against them, because they did not want that black country to flourish. And they tell the lie that the American Repatriation Society closed down because Negroes didn't want to go to Africa. When they shut that down, it was refugee camps at so many different ports across the South and New York and everything for black people waiting to leave to go to Africa. And then going further back than that, Martin Delaney had set up in Yoruba land. It wasn't even Nigeria at that time. He was setting up land. He got land from the king, and he was going to set up a triangle trade between Jamaica, Africa, and America for black people to become economically independent. Because as long as
that was before LeGrand's daughter named Nigeria.
Okay, no,
go ahead, ma'am.
No, I was just going to say that, I mean, just to close, because I'm going to have to actually leave the show soon. I'm just going to say to close, what we need to do is just to keep on doing what we're doing and actually keep on trying to educate black people, and not just educate, but give solutions as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can do it. We can use, obviously, Facebook is a fantastic platform, but also your show, Arthur, is really a great platform as well. So I think maybe a bit more advertising and promoting of your show would be really good. And then we could do a lot of, talking and spreading the word and uniting through your show. So maybe a bit more promotion of your show would be good on Facebook.
Yes,
I'm not sure that everybody
knows
about it.
I want to get Brother Pianchi on there as a host and yourself one day, so we can hear your opinions. My opinion is my opinion. His opinion. I respect everybody's opinion because we need to matriculate these opinions, because one of these opinions may be what we need and what the people will listen to for us to change the situation,
yes,
or start to change,
yes,
the situation. And I want to say